Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's all a G up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil T, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RNG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners.
You guys act like it.
Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be beat.
Don't get no more realer.
All right, welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real sports guys do real sports and all the other stuff. I love at the end of that where Game Changer said, don't nobody get realer. I love that. Welcome. We are here tonight, and we are brought to you by Frederick's Accounting, Excel Academics, On the Rocks, and Resistance Digital Solutions. Our guests and hosts come via Frederick's Accounting Gateway, Frederick County, a national accounting service where clients get confidence and support for their business and personal accounting. Me, Frederick County, the official accountant for IRSG. Tell them that the Real Sports Guys sent you. Go to IRSG.com and click on their logo, and they will be ready to support you. Welcome to the Resistance. It's going to be a great night tonight, and we kind of start with the intro to let you know we got a lot of hot stuff going on tonight. We're going to be talking NFL. We're going to be going a little bit of fantasy. We're going to be talking about Ray Rice's suspension. We're going to be talking about the Tony Dungy comment. We're going to dibble and dabble a little bit into some fantasy, maybe talk about some of the quarterbacks that we like or don't like, or like fool's gold. Training camp is kicked off, so season is here and going. We're going to get into the NBA. There's a lot of great things happening. You know, NBA is now becoming like the NFL. The NFL used to own their offseason. Now the NBA is, ever since the decision, the NBA is just buzzing in the offseason, all kinds of stuff going on. And Shelley Sterling and the scene in the courtroom where names were being called and decisions come down. You know, there's going to be a movie made about this. We got some stuff going on in terms of, MLB, and we'll get into love thing, but we've got a special guest. You know, one of the things that is great about what we're doing with this show is that we can give insight to all aspects of sports, and, you know, we all have been pretty forward about our interest in all levels of collegiate athletics and real emphasis on Division III. And all of us, if you've been a long-time listener, understand that our origin and connection comes from a small college in Beloit, Wisconsin, Beloit College. And One of the great things about what we can do is share some insight into who we are by, you know, sometimes bringing some of our Beloit roots in. And so we'll have Seth Dora, who is the new coach of Beloit College, will be on with us tonight. And, you know, really kind of giving you a perspective. We're hearing a lot of this stuff, what's happening with the Big Five and Division One, and, you know, a lot of stuff that are going on. But there are a whole bunch of athletes who are competing every day without the guarantee of ever making it to the league. And, you know, he's a long-time lifer as it relates to small college football, and was a great player himself in college, and we'll learn more about his pathway. And so we look forward to that interview. But, you know, it'd be hard-pressed to set the stage without having my guy. He kind of liked my stability. You know, sometimes when you hit the court, you got to know that guy that you always know. You ain't never got to ask whether or not he's going to show up and put his minutes in. You almost know the cat only that you just put his – in the box score, you already can put 25 and 10. You know, he's like the big fundamental. And so y'all know that when y'all listen, he always brings it consistently. So we got my man Phil, PhD. How you doing, baby?
I'm doing good, my man, D. Wills. A few weeks ago, I sat here and I dogged the James Brown movie, so I've been overcome and overwhelmed with text messages and emails and Facebook messages. one of my good friends, DG, he went on Fandango. He took the initiative. He went on Fandango and emailed me some tickets to the local theater in my area. So I will be watching that movie. I have a built-in date night. So I mentioned to you all a few weeks ago, I'm going to go see it. I was skeptical, but I'm going to go see it. But that's where I'm sitting on right now, James Brown.
And it's hilarious. Now, that's a friend. He's not going to criticize you. What he's going to say is, I'm going to take away all your excuses.
Yeah.
I'm going to send you a ticket. Don't tell me you can't afford it, you ain't got time. I'm going to take care of it. All you got to do is show up. That's a friend.
That's right. And he let me know that he knows when that ticket has been redeemed. He can go on the website and see when it's been redeemed. So he is going to hold me accountable.
So you're officially on the clock. That's what you're saying.
I am.
So we can expect a report back from you on the movie and what you've learned about James Brown's contribution historically, the Godfather of Soul. You understand why he is the Godfather, and you'll get a sense of that, why a lot of these beats originally in the early days were break beats off of James Brown stuff. You know, you'll get a sense of all that. That'll be good. We all have those blind spots. What I love about you is that you're not afraid to explore those blind spots. And so it'll be good for you to breathe easy, to take that on, to do what's necessary to expand your mind. But if you come back with some craziness, it'll definitely get on you. You can't just say something about
I've learned to keep my opinions to myself when it comes to James Brown. So I will, and unless I absolutely love it, I will simply not mention it.
Well, man, it's been a fascinating weekend in a lot of different things, man. And I guess I want to open up. You know, we're going to go a little open here. You know, the Ray Rice thing is taking on a different life, you know. So they come down with the decision. Obviously, there's a lot of criticism of Goodell with the length of the suspension. Ray Rice goes to training camp, and he gets a standing ovation. There's a lot of dynamics here with this. You know, and I've been thinking a lot about, you know, what do you take from this in terms of the NFL, when, you know, they've been given longer suspensions for for other things, and he gets a two-game extension plus a third-game game check. And what that means to, you know, what we all are concerned about when it comes to domestic violence. And if you listen to RSG, we've called Roger Goodell, he's the perennial line stepper.
Right.
We said
habitual.
That. We point at habitual line stepper. You know, he's the one that's often been, you know, we've been as critical about it. Phil, what was your reaction to all the reactions around this? I mean, you know, how did you see this? Where'd you fit as you were seeing everybody's reaction to this to the suspension?
Well, it's been a heartbreaking situation to just observe it over the last few months. And the talk that has spurred since the suspension was handed down, I feel like it takes away from the issue. It takes away from in between Ray Rice and his wife. And just the issue and the conversation around domestic violence. I think when we start focusing in on, did he get enough punishment? Did he get too much? Did he not get enough? It takes the conversation away from domestic violence and what such a big issue it is in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it initially happened, one of the positives that came out of this situation, you know, when the stories first broke a few months ago, was that there was more talk about domestic violence, how to report it, you know, what are the outcomes related to it. A lot of ball players stepped up and, you know, and talked about, you know, them growing up around it and how that's influenced their families and their lives. And, you know, one of the most powerful things I heard was from Dwayne Wade, and he mentioned that he had saw some of that, you know, growing up, and he knew that he made a decision right then and there that wouldn't be him.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear stories like that, and you hear athletes who are that have the floor to talk about those types of things, I think it really brings a positive in a really, really bad and nasty situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you heard people on Mike and Mike, you heard the Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Jackson show talking about, you know, websites and ways people can get help. And unfortunately, now the story has shifted towards Goodell and suspension, and to me it just takes away from the story.
Mm. Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, how do you create situations where this does not happen at all, where you're not even having to deal with a suspension? And what is it behind it? What's happening behind it? And I think, you know, and, again, how do you get support when it's happening? And it's fun, you know, even to the fact that, you know, much of his decision had a lot to do with, you know, how Ray Rice's wife, you know, her remarks during their meeting, but we don't know what was said, you know, and
right.
In that, but, you know, even how it's portraying whether or not she was, you know, deflecting it or not. I mean, she could have been very straight up honest, you know, if he doesn't, again, we don't know what was said in that space, but again, everybody's dissecting every aspect of that and taking away from the overall issue. Like you said, like people like Dwayne, like there's a number of folks growing up have been witnesses to that directly, and as kids understood the impact of it. And those messages, I think, are very important for a lot of folks, and particularly young folks coming up. And so, yeah, we are missing an important opportunity with this. And for Ray Rice, you know, what's the road back? Right, you know, so what's your road back, and how do you start walking that? You know, that's yet to be seen here. So, you know, it's something that's going to be we're going to have to watch and pay attention to. You know, I think it's one of those things that has been a part of sports that, you know, unfortunately we have too many cases and interactions in this. And it's something that, you know, we're going to have to continue to pay attention to. Because, you know, we can talk about role models or not, but these are visible individuals. And if this is seen as an acceptable behavior, you know, young cats are looking at how this stuff is being handled. And we hear a lot of this stuff happening on college campuses. There's a lot, you know, that's happening around. So, we need to really pay attention to these issues and not get caught up in some of the other politics that are around it and not lose the real source of the issue. So I think you hit some points right on head. In that same vein, we have someone like Tony Dungy who I think we've all talked about in glowing terms about it, making some remarks around regarding Sam, regarding the distraction. And many people believe anytime you're talking about distraction, you know, that's the code word for being homophobic, right? It's not, so what is the distraction, right? And he caught a lot of heat for those remarks. Also, given some of the remarks he said in the past, you know, given some of his beliefs. How did you react? I know you're the kind of person that, you know, knowing you, you know, in how you probably view Tony, like I did. I mean, we, and I still do, as someone that we know has been a really good role model for a lot of players and been someone who's groomed coaches. What was your reaction when you heard those remarks, and how did you react?
Well, I think what Tony Dungy said is what a lot of NFL franchises feel. And their actions support that. You have a guy who was the MVP, the defensive MVP in the SEC, and he was taken in the seventh round, late in the seventh round. So I think a lot of NFL teams are saying exactly, their actions are supporting exactly what Dungy said. Now, Dungy's statements, I don't necessarily agree with him, but he was asked, would he keep him on his team? And he answered it honestly. And I think in the media, sometimes we want somebody to be honest, but we want them to be honest in a politically correct way. He was clearly stating his opinion. Game Changer said it a couple of months ago when the whole story hit regarding Sam's. You know, he's not a distraction. You know, I mean, his sexual orientation should not be a distraction in the locker room. It probably will not be, you know, what he does in his spare time is what he does. So I don't like the term distraction in this context. I don't. But I also get Dungy's statements, and he was clearly speaking from a past coach, like from a coach's perspective in terms of what he want to see on his team or not want to see.
Can we have a dialogue, right? So part of advancement is having discourse. The way the media, the way everything is shaped right now, you can't really have real conversations where you're going to have some clear disagreements, right? And I think that's part of, if you're going to have growth, how do you have discourse, public eye? That's a tough thing to do today. Because everything has its angle and its slant. So, you know, I think, you know, Game Changer, like you said, he said it right. You know, how can this be a distraction? I mean, we've had NFL athletes doing, you know, even look at what you're talking about with Rice. That's a distraction, right? But you're not going to cut Ray Rice, are you?
Right.
You know, so. You know, when we talk about, you know, distractions and how we categorize them, you know, this whole thing I heard with Josh Gordon in your neighborhood, you know, now it was contact. Now, he's been a distraction, but it was secondary contact now.
So now they find every way in the world trying to figure out how to get him on the field out of a year's suspension on something on someone who has clearly been a distraction, right, based on it. So people's ability to stomach distractions change, don't they? And so it's like, you know, this is where you get that slippery slope. And I think for Dungy, one thing I would have said is he got to qualify that. Like, he got to be able to say what that means, right? Because the NFL is clearly, let's say Josh Gordon's case, figured out, at least in the Cleveland Browns case, have figured out they can stomach a lot. Would you agree? I mean,
absolutely.
We can stomach a high level, huh?
I said absolutely.
I mean, they have whatever it is that he's doing, they figured out they can deal with whatever it is. And if it wasn't for them to spend it for, what is it, a year now? You know, if they would have spent it for six games, he would have been back in playing. They wouldn't have cut him. Or they wouldn't cut him. They would try to find a way. They're still trying to find a way to work it out. Right? So, you know, I think where he runs up against it, as you said, like the NFL runs up against it, is that there's too many other things that tell us that it's something else. Right? You said, you know, he would, and I've been saying that. Everybody try to break down his this and that. But if you defensive player of the year in the SEC, I don't care how you break it down, you can say, well, his hips are too tight and he got lateral movement. That person gets drafted much higher than the seventh round. Right? I mean, any other circumstance, you know, we all admit that person gets drafted much higher. If you defensive player of the year in the SEC, you're going to get drafted higher. So you're right. A lot of folks spoke, but, you know, the ability to stomach a distraction obviously varies because people like Josh Gordon seem to get all kinds of chances to do stuff on teams that haven't won anything. And we don't say anything.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the distraction that he is. And so
I think
NFL's got some issues there. Huh?
A distraction is a guy who doesn't show up for practice. A distraction is a guy who disrupts the locker room. You know, those are distractions.
Yes.
That affect a football team. You know, when you think about it historically, Jackie Robinson, he was considered a distraction. You know? And, I mean, I'm a fan of diversity in a lot of different ways. Not just racial diversity, but diversity in thought. Diversity in attitudes, diversity all across the board, I think, makes groups stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean it doesn't make it more challenging, but I think it makes groups stronger. And when you have the right leaders in the right situation, you know, they can make situations much more difficult and much more challenging than what we're talking about here in terms of football locker room. But just in an organizational setting, you see leaders lay down the foundation to make all kind of diverse groups work. And so, you know, the football locker room and sports locker rooms in general, I mean, be a challenge, but that doesn't mean that it's right to exclude somebody. So I think given the right situation, and everything that I know and have read about Jeff Fisher, he's a right leader in this situation. So I'm really optimistic. I really am.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, he's going to make a football decision, right? You know, and I think for Michael, I think that's what he wants. And he'll know when it's a football decision from the way in which he's treated and the opportunities he's given to perform, opportunities he's given to make plays, opportunities to what we say, the eye in the sky don't lie. The eye in the sky don't lie. Were you supposed to be when you were supposed to be there? Were you there quick enough? There's things that for people who play football long enough, we know who can play, right? You know, you play sports, man. You had a sense of when a cat could play right away, right? You saw it. You could see when he was there in the right place, right time, how much he studied. How much he did. So there are things that there's ways to evaluate from a football standpoint. Is it somebody who's going to help you do what you need to do? And I think for him, for Michael, I think what he's saying is, do I get a full and honest chance at it? That's it. He ain't asking for a guarantee to make the team. I don't think if you ask him directly, That's what he's asking for. There are certain people who are demanding it, but I don't think he's been playing football a long time. He knows that he knows when he's producing and when he's not. And, you know, he'll know whether or not it's a football decision. So I think, you know, Jeff Fisher is the right leader because you know he's going to make it on a football decision. Can you help the team? And, you know, people who've been around the sport, you can tell, you know. So I think those are some things that hopefully it'll be about rather than the speculation about whether or not he'll get a fair shot to do whatever he needs to do. Boy, Goodell is in the middle of everything, isn't he? You just got to, you know, it's just, he's in the middle of stuff he's not supposed to be in the middle of. I'm going to ask this question while we're here, because, you know, this is the biggest criticism. You can't track his decisions. Like, this is what you do. Like, you look at this stuff every day. You do research on this. His decision-making, right, and his patterns and his justifications don't line up. Would you say that? Does it look like there's a rubric he's using to really align his decision-making around some of these issues and how things happen? It just seems like in all this stuff, it's just like the NFL is in a lot of stuff, but Goodell is part of that stuff because you can't follow his reason or rationale on a lot of different things. And it just feels like it's, I don't know, maybe I'm jumping to something, but does it look like he's consistent? Have you seen him as a consistent person? Maybe I'm missing something.
I think that early on he may have made been trying to make an impression and a splash of, hey, I'm a different type of commissioner, and I really want to clean up the perception of the athletes in this game, you know, so I'm going to hold you all accountable and to a higher standard. So perhaps when he initially came in, you know, a few years ago, maybe he was a little bit heavy with the stick, but I think clearly overall, his decisions have been sound, and I think they have accomplished the primary goal I think he had was to clean up the perception of his product, which is the NFL. So I have no problems with strong leadership. As long as it's fair and it's consistent. And in these situations, you're really comparing apples to oranges.
Mm-hmm.
And you're comparing, you know, when he comes in to discipline these athletes who, in most situations, have made very poor decisions. Even if they're snapshots of who they are and who they have been in the public eye as athletes, they've made poor decisions. They have to be held accountable to them. So I've had no problem. I mean, some of his decisions, I wouldn't have done them that way, but in regards to what he has done, I've had no problem with it. I really haven't. It seems like, you know, a lot of people are comparing the Michael Vick situation versus the Rice situation. And, you know, the NFL office put out a statement in terms of, you know, legal issues and who was charged this, and Michael Vick had jail time and so forth, and even the situation with Stallworth. Those explanations, they work for me. They do. I think at the end of the day, players are being held accountable for stuff that they're doing off the field. And the old NFL, that may or may not have happened. So I'm glad that there has been some penalties.
And I was trying to figure that out, but I'm not – and this is part of what I think is more of perception than reality, because I'm not sure if the police, you know, whatever, what is it called, the blotter, whatever it is, up the timer or whatever they call it, I'm not sure if it's any less than it was before. I don't know if we have evidence that the number of athletes, NFL athletes, involvement in those activities have gone down under Goodell. I'm not sure. There's nothing I'm seeing that says he's – deterring anything. Maybe I'm missing something, but it doesn't seem like, and maybe that might be something for me to look into, but it feels like I see this kind of branding and this of toughness, but I don't know if these incidents are that any less now than they were before.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I'm not sure if they were any less, but the thing that you have now is that the NFL is stepping in, regardless of what happens in the legal system. Players, if they're serving time or if they, you know, it doesn't matter. They're being held accountable to a higher standard. When you look back to the Ray Lewis situation, you know, back in 1999 or 2000, whenever that was, I don't believe that he got suspended. Clearly he played that year. He won the Super Bowl and was the MVP, but I don't believe that he got suspended, even though he got 12 months of probation. He got a fine by the NFL, but he didn't miss any time. So he got a quarter million dollar fine by the NFL. And I think had the same thing happened today with Roger Goodell being the commissioner, there may or may not be a fine, but he wouldn't miss time, where it's impacting in terms of his salary, but also the team as well. So right now, I think with Goodell is hurting. He's just not hurting the players financially. He's hurting the team and the organization, especially in the NFL, where you lose one game, that can make a difference between making the playoffs or not, having home field advantage or not, being 7-9 versus 6-10, and that could send a whole staff to be fired. This is really impacting the entire organization from a personnel side. So I like the shift of accountability, because now it's linked into not just the players' pockets and reputation, but it's impacting the organization. And so now the organization, you know, has more of an incentive to really drill this home with the players as well.
And this is why you do what you do, and I love hearing you talk about this. You know, that's, you know, as you framed it, is the habitual line stepper, is he's created a systematic way to put pressure on teams to then put pressure on players. Like, at the end of the day, the one thing that affects any player at any level that they pay attention to is playing time, right? Even though you get paid, there's a time that you need people in the field to have an impact. And like you said, when you only have a very finite number of games to prove whether or not you're ready to go to that next level, any game you lose means a lot. And that part, you know, hopefully, and over time, that is a deterrent, because that might shape the way people view whether or not they want to resign you, whether or not they want to, you know, give you that deal or whatever. Because if you can't be available, what can you do for us? Because availability is something that's important for us. And anytime you're not available, that hurts us. And that hurts you at the negotiating table as well. So it may not impact you now, but it's going to be a residual effect to that, because you know that that's going to happen every time you do something wrong. So that could be part of it. You know, the NFL, you know, they're strong, you know, but it's interesting. They seem like they're taking a little bit of nibbles and hits around the edges here lately. We're going to stay in this news since we I feel like we got this this kind of Hollywood news flow going and incidents, and while the energy's right, I'm going to stay right in this realm. Now, I don't know how much you had a chance to pay attention to the what was happening with Donald and Shelly Sterling. Now, I was listening to this while I was driving, and I guess he called her a pig, I think, in the courtroom, and went off and did some things. And, you know, Donald's gone to another level, but the court system ruled that he can't get in the way of the sale. And so she can move forward with the deal. They anticipate that the deal will probably get made sometime in August, concluded. Ballmer and that group will be able to take over the Clippers. What do you make of this, man? I mean, your background, and you got some training in this. I mean, you can give us some professional insight into what you're seeing. This is amazing. This is a 30 for 30, man. We already if you were to give this a title, I don't know what you would give it, but you know this is already a 30 for 30. You know they're already making tapes for this one. They already got the stuff for this one. What do you make of this, man?
I don't know. It's a mess. This is something that I hope does not become a trend in sports.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a very, very unique situation. I mean, you think about what happened with the Dodgers a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My husband, you know, when the organization got stuck in the middle of a really nasty divorce settlement or situation. But, I mean, this is even more unique than that because you've got, you know, competency coming into play. You've got a sale of a team coming into play. And then clearly
mm-hmm.
you have the huge PR gaffe that was Donald Sterling a few months ago. And on top of that, you have some really big players, figuratively speaking, in terms of people like Chris Paul and just top players across the league hinting that this may be a league-wide issue if he's still in play as far as being the legal owner of the team by the time the season starts. You have people, you know, like Doc Rivers, who's the current coach and also the VP of basketball operations. You know, he has one of the top voices in the league, you know,
mm-hmm.
in terms of respect amongst the players. Clearly he's a minority. And I think for all these reasons, plus it's the right thing to do to protect the brand, the NBA has been all about trying to get the team out of Sterling's hands. And this guy's not going to go down. And when I saw the ruling pretty much is saying that Shelly Sterling has legal right to sell the team and that the team, you know, for the $2 billion can be sold to Ballmer, but if they can do this before Sterling has his appeals, but he still has the right to make appeals. So part of it is kind of a head scratcher. Be good to have RJ on to talk about it to get his legal expertise with it, but you know. That's where I was a little bit confused. And the writer of the article that I read, he was confused too, or I shouldn't say whoever wrote it, they were confused too, because it's like, okay, we have a resolution, but not really. And how messy would this be a year and a half down the road if somebody rules that the team was you know, shouldn't have been sold because Sterling didn't give his consent? What a mess that'll be. You know,
yeah.
It's like Ballmer's going to need Lloyd's of London insurance, you know, just in case. I mean, this is messy. This is messy, man. This is messy, 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 messy. But I will say Adam Silver came out smelling like roses because he was definite, and he was strong, and he made the decisions he needed to make. And so I think from a good faith standpoint, the NBA has seemed to do everything that they could do. And the Clippers, in terms of the Sterling family, have tried to get rid of the team too. And so if I'm a player in the NBA and this thing, for whatever reason, still drags on, you know, I'm not sure if I would have an issue enough with it not to play because the good faith actions have been taken. And you understand with legal stuff, sometimes it takes longer.
Yeah, and you hit this. I mean, and the thing about it, the part that people don't understand is there's motivation for his attorneys, because these cats see this as a cash cow for them for the next 10 years. Like, this is the biggest case. You could put 20 lawyers on this and bill on this You don't care if you ever win, as long as you can find enough dirt to keep it going. I mean, people are discounting that motivation. It has nothing to do with him, right? Because if you're the attorney for the, I mean, you are billing on this on a major level. And I think people are, you know, everybody's talking about his motivation, but think about his attorney's motivation when you think about it from a business standpoint. You know, and I thought about that last night. I mean, if you're that group, you're like, I'm keeping this going. I mean, this is how we can be on this for the next 15 years, you know, because his estate will be suing. I mean, you know, it's that motivation, you know, to not let the case go because the money's too good. I mean, I don't hear anybody say anything about that, but that adds to the mix, right? So you're not going to let this die. Think about that. What do you think the billing hours are on that? That's going to be sick. But the stuff he said in there, they said he called her name, and did he say, I love you, or said, I love you, then called her name? I mean, when you have money to do it, you want to stay in the court. I was just like, what? The billionaire lifestyle just allows you, and you can be frustrated, but you get $1 billion.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. Like, out of all the frustration he's got, he gets to walk away $1 billion before taxes, but still pretty good money, right? I mean, it's just a world that, I mean, we can't even imagine all together. I mean, that's amazing. But you're right. I mean, if they find the right loophole or something happens and this sale goes through, oh, my goodness, that's a mess for you all together.
Yeah.
If it's going to happen, he's the one person who can make it happen because he's done it in his life. You know, if there is a loophole to be found, he will find it, or his people will find it. So it's amazing. But the underbelly, I think you hit on right on the head, is that that's not being written about as much is this shifting of the power of players and how they organize in their understanding of their power in their relationship to corporate America and who they represent and how they organize around that in a way that's not official part of a union, right? That piece, you know, you always have these watershed moments in sports in terms of these dynamics. You know, that aspect of this is going to be written about, you know, 10 years from now, you know, in terms of the role in the way players used their brand to influence this. That's something to unpack. You know, like you said, Chris Paul, the way they organize and the role of social media and the way they can connect and all these different things that they use to put this slight pressure on the NBA to act and, you know, overt and covert. And this unity between – because Doc Rivers is also an ex-player, right? So he's a former NBA player. So that, you know, Kevin Johnson, former NBA player. So even that fraternity that exists within that group that is kind of working together is something that I think is pretty interesting. So these are some things, boy. We hit some hot topics here. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, brought to you by XL Academics on the Rocks. Our good friends at Resistance Digital Solutions and Frederick Accounting. As I said before, our guests and hosts come to you via the Frederick Accounting Gateway. It's been good. If you want to follow us, catch us on realsportsguys.com. You can hit us up on Twitter, hit us up on Tumblr. You can get on Facebook if that's whatever your choice is, and we can keep the conversation going. You can also connect and support our sponsors. They're at, realsportsguys.com. We always appreciate it. And we're all on iTunes. You know, we have a lot of people who get back at us that they like the podcast. They like to be able to listen when they're on their way to work or at night or working out. So know that you can do that. You're listening with Phil T. and D. Wilson here. We're excited. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll have Coach Seth Dewar from Beloit College. As many of you who have been following us for a long time know that our common connection of the folks here on the Real Sports Guy on the main and the Mothership show is that you know, that's where we all have our connection. And we'd like to give you some insight into, you know, a place that kind of shaped our own development and growth, and to have someone like Coach Duer on, who is beginning his tenure as a football coach, and also our support for small college football and small college sports. So we're looking forward to that at the bottom of the hour. Again, realsportsguys.com is where you can catch us. So we're going to transition a little bit here and really get a little bit more NBA talk before we have Coach on. But, you know, we're getting a lot of reports on our man Derrick Rose. You know, I'm looking forward to Derrick Rose coming back. It's hurt my heart because I love Derrick Rose. I'm not a big Bulls fan, but I liked Rose when he was in college. I just like the way he plays. He plays hard.
Yeah.
You know, I've been rooting for him because of that. And it feels like he's coming back with – always got both fingers crossed, everything. But if he comes back with any kind of – anywhere close to where he was originally, you know, given some of the moves they made with Gasol coming on board and just – the team, like, where do you see the Bulls going with that, and how do you feel about what you've heard about Rose coming back?
Well, there's a lot of potential there. I mean, Derrick Rose was he's the reason why LeBron didn't get three straight MVPs. You know, I still contend he should have had that MVP, but he didn't get it. But that speaks to how good, how talented Derrick Rose was or is or was before the injury. And think about it. LeBron James has been one of the most dominant players over the last 4 years. There's been very few players. I mean, you probably can't list 10 players who have had as dominating of a four-year stretch as he's had. And Derrick Rose won one of those MVPs. So I think whenever you can have a player or add a player to the mix of that caliber, the Bulls have the potential of being excellent. Now, they got rid of Dang. They moved him to Cleveland last year. But I really like the guys they have to replace him. Jimmy Butler, he can play the two or three position. Excellent spot-up shooter. He's developing to be an excellent defender. And then this kid Snell, who I believe is going into his second year, he played really well in summer league this year.
Oh, my goodness, he was going off.
Yeah. And the game changer would be proud. He would be very, very proud knowing that I watched enough summer league to know that. It's unfortunate he's not here quite yet to hear that. But so I think they have great potential. Call me crazy, but I think Boozer still has something in the tank. And they were able to keep Gibson, and they got Gasol. And Gasol still has a lot to prove. I like this team, man. I think Noah is a glue guy. He's a guy that will give you 15 and 10, 16 and 12, and he brings a certain level of toughness that meshes with Thibodeau's system. So when you have a guy, their offense has been kind of anemic, man. They picked up McDermott, and they are bringing one of the top talents back, offensive talents in the league. So I've been rooting for Derrick Lee for so long. So I really do hope that he's able to come back and be healthy.
And I think the one update on that, and I know with Boozer, I mean, they amnestied him to be picked up
in
L.A. That's right. But I still think that clears up, because you think about people like Taj and some of these other players, I think the rotation, I think, is going to be better because of that. I mean, I think there's some people, you know, they had to play Boozer those three quarters, you know, they didn't pay him the fourth quarter. But that, I think that's opening their rotation. Yeah, the highest paid non-fourth quarter player in the league. you know, and they had to figure out how to. I think the rotation is going to be much smoother with Thibodeau being able to play some of those other pieces. But, you know, like you said, like Snell, you know, you could open it up a lot. Now you got some minutes for these young guys who probably their minutes may have been cut by 5 to 10 minutes because of the rotation you have. And then, you know, I think the other thing about it is, you know, Paul Gasol is a much better passer. So now you got great more involvement of players. And also take some pressure off of, I mean, between Noah and Gasol, and Noah turned into a great running that offense through him, you know, having big men who can pass can also take some pressure off of Derek actually having to be a creator all the time. So, the question is who's going to be the person who is going to help orchestrate and develop the offense. I'm not sure who they've hired on that side because, you know, Tibbs got the defense down. But, you know, if he can get someone for offense the way Doc had him for defense, right, and just kind of let that go and really utilize these parts, he's going to be good. But you're right, this is going to be a tough team to compete with every night in and night out. In the East, and so I'm feeling good about it. You're over there in Cleveland, and living all that. What was your opinion about this whole jersey 23-6 and all the stuff around LeBron?
I don't care.
But you don't really care about it. I love it. I heard people talking about it. I'm like, why? Who cares about his jersey? I mean,
yeah.
So what? He's doing what he's supposed to do. You know, he let the fans do a thing and. Everything LeBron is getting overanalyzed right now. What we need to do is just watch him play at that point. But you say you don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. I heard about it. And for a bit, I thought it'd be kind of cool that, you know, say if he wore number 6 or a different number other than 23, it'd be cool, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago from now. Like, we'll know kind of like before Miami and after Miami, you know. BM, you know, before Miami and AM after Miami from the clips. Now with the 23, you're not really going to be able to tell the difference unless, you know, when he was a rookie and he wasn't as bulked up as he is now and clearly more of a baby face. But other than that, I didn't give it any thought. I just think LeBron's on a thing right now where he's loved by many, and, you know, he's milking it for all it's worth, and I can't say I blame him.
Yeah, he's doing his thing. I mean, that he's, you know, he is a marketing guru, and, you know, he's someone that that understands the game. And, you know, I think there are things he's doing right now. And I think as people look back in 5 and 10 years in terms of how he built his brand and how he baked that into what he's doing in terms of his sports, you know, very few people have that leverage that he has. But there's some things that he's doing that, you know, when people look back on are going to be game-changing from a marketing standpoint. So, you know, he's a smart guy, you know, and so I appreciate it. I love watching people get a little – stressed out and egged up about it because, you know, it adds fuel to fire. I think people are just bored, but it does tell you how much the NBA is off season is has changed in so much in that talk. So life has been tough, man. It's been good. Are there any other things? You know, we in this space right now. You know, as you think about it, you've been you know, looking at your last couple of weeks, you've been kind of mulling over sports. Are there other things that you kind of been keeping your eye on, that kind of been the filthy, like, you know what, this thing, I've been watching this. Is there anything that's been out there that you've been keeping your eye on?
Well, I know we're 2 weeks late, but the All-Star game was pretty cool this year with all the attention paid, the well-deserved attention paid to Derek Jeter. Clearly, being from Kalamazoo, I've had a special eye on Jeter's career, his entire career. So, and, you know, I thought it was awesome, just the attention. That Respect commercial by the Jordan brand, that was a sweet commercial. That put me back in the days of when we loved, you know, at least my family, we loved watching the NBA All-Star game. And I'm sorry, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. And it was an event. I remember back when Bo Jackson was playing, and, you know, you watch the game, but you also watch the commercials because What about the commercials regarding Bo knows this, Bo knows that?
Yeah.
Just do it. You know, you are always going to see a new Nike commercial, a Bo Jackson commercial during the All-Star game. And so this was one of the first baseball All-Star games I sat down and watched in probably 5 or 10 years. And I thought it was just done first class. I mean, baseball has always had a great job of honoring their legends. I think back when Ted Williams was around, back in that All-Star game 10 or 15 years ago in Boston, and how they had all the legends come out. It's, I mean, baseball knows how to do it right, I think.
And I think they handle it extremely well. You know, how with your roots in Kalamazoo, how have, what's been the reaction at home to this kind of retirement and going home? I mean, how are they honoring, you know, someone who was really, the favorite son?
It's been great. It's been great. I talked to a few of my guys. I played baseball way back in the day, and we were all talking to each other while we were watching it. So it was it was great.
Well, you know, I always think about, if he would have been drafted by the Yankees, growing up in Ann Arbor, he wanted to go to Michigan. And, what if he would have done that? But, he is, when you think about all the stuff that folks have gone through and, all the stuff that players during this era have gone through, it's been amazing. And another person I saw who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, Frank Thomas, it's been amazing with all the chatter around Bonds and everything. You know, Frank was, one of the top players and never really got the respect. I mean, people fail to realize that, Frank was a, incredible football player as well at Auburn. Thought about Frank Thomas and, with all this swirl around, the whole steroids era and things like that. But to see Derek Jeter being honored and then seeing Frank Thomas get into the hall, Frank, knowing that, Frank had, pretty much done it the right way, as far as we can tell, getting that love now versus when they got it as players. Derek has always kind of got it, but Frank has never really gotten it. The way that you look at his numbers, you look at how he's performed, Frank Thomas has never really gotten the love he probably deserves. So
I'm going
to
let the game changer take the Frank Thomas question.
Yeah,
and I'm very equipped to do that as a young White Sox fan. My love for baseball kind of came around as Frank was breaking into the league, and I was an avid White Sox fan as a kid, probably up until I was about 14, 15. But baseball was kind of the first sport that really kind of got its hook.
Yeah, as I'm thinking about Frank, he was, someone that for me was, he never really, I mean, you think about hitting for power, average, all the different things that I think are very important. Frank never got that love.
Yeah, he always kind of lived in that tier right below the big names. And, of course, then, guys kind of, Sammy Sosa, who I can't stand, just because when he was with the White Sox, he sucked. he go play for the Cubs, who I also can't stand, and then he gets good. But Sosa, McGuire, Bonds, those guys started juicing, and they took the game somewhere else, and it kind of took some of Frank's shine, And I felt like, I watched his speech because, I'm not a big baseball fan, but watching Frank get inducted, the big hurt kind of took me back to that era where I was a baseball fan and brought back a lot of those feelings that I had for baseball. But listening to Frank and how guys like him who were clean during that era kind of were done a disservice, because he didn't hit for power with ridiculous gaudy video game numbers. He was kind of pushed out of the spotlight when he was one of the best players of his era, hands down. There was no point in that era where you could talk about, as you said, great guys who could hit for power, but also hit for average, where he wasn't coming up in a conversation. The other thing that was amazing about Frank that I really learned about, that I really learned from him, and it stuck with me in regards to baseball, and I've even kind of translated it over as I become more of a basketball guy. It's a philosophy that I think translates into basketball. But Frank never took, he never swung at bad pitches, you know. Mm. And to me, that's really the essence of guys like Frank and Tony Gwynn and Kirby Puckett, guys who were hitters, who were just flat-out hitters. And, you know, they would work the pitcher. You know, they would work the pitcher, work the pitcher, work the pitcher, you know, until they got the pitch that they wanted and that they could do something with, you know. And that likens me to guys who are, you know, great scorers in basketball. They don't want just any shot. They want a shot that they like. They want their shot, you know. And that's what Frank, he didn't want any pitch, and he wasn't going to swing at any pitch. And that's kind of a lost art. A lot of guys nowadays, especially power hitters, they swing at everything. You know, strikeouts are at an all-time high in baseball. You know, guys are striking out left and right. It was different back then. You had guys who were technicians behind the plate as far as the art of hitting the baseball, the art of working the pitcher, the art of working the count. They were great at it. And Frank was one of those guys.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the and never really apologized for it. You know, usually you had guys that would try to, you know, conform to what's, you know, the current trend, but he would never buck that. People would want him to be more aggressive and not really be patient, and he was strong enough to be able to do that. And so, you know, I think that's something I've always loved about his patience in a time when people were impatient. So that's the amazing part about it.
Yeah, and you know, just I was glad to see him go in. Hats off to him. You know, I was, again, it took me back. I'm sure in the same sense that PhD was taken back, you know, with his connection to Jeter. Frank and I have we got a little connection. And, you know, it just takes you back to a time where, you know, things were simpler for me as far as my fandom in sports. You know, you had that childlike innocence, and it was just all fresh and new, and I just wanted to learn everything I could, you know, memorizing batting averages and on-base percentages and all that kind of stuff. It was just fun. And Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt, he brings me back to that. So we want to transition, right, D. Wills? We have a special guest coming on. I'm going to let you go ahead. Yes. And we can bring in PhD and our special guest.
Well, you know, one of the things that we've kind of always talked about is, you know, there's a common origin for all three of us who have been driving this main show on Real Sports Guys, and we all have a common place, Beloit College in Beloit, Wisconsin, and it's a place that we talk a lot about how it's shaped our lives, not only as athletes, but as student athletes, and we, you know, as much as we talked about Division I and all the things happening, we've also wanted to really provide some insight to what's happening in other aspects of college sports. And tonight we've been fortunate enough to have with us the new head coach at Beloit College, Seth Dura. How you doing, Coach?
Doing real well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I'm so excited. A number of my former teammates are probably listening in and checking in. And I was looking at your bio, and this is, you know, you are played small college football, and I looked at your undergraduate degree in biochemistry and a master's in chemistry. Tells me a lot about your commitment to your own personal development as a coach. And I guess I just want to talk first about, you know, just your own personal journey as a player to being a coach, and then, you know, maybe just, you know, get into what you hope will happen now that you're at the helm at Beloit College.
Sure. Well, grew up in Ohio, and I know you guys are mostly Michigan guys, so I apologize because you probably don't want to hear some of that. But
no, we don't want to do that now.
We're not going there. We're not going there, but I mean, you know, like you guys, I mean, I looked around. I had a passion to play college football. I was a guy that, you know, was a good high school player, but not a scholarship guy. And, you know, when it came down to it, I wanted a place that would provide a great education, and was able to do that at a small college in Ohio that was a great experience for me, you know, and I was fortunate to have a good football experience, but really, you know, just what I learned in the classroom, outside of the classroom, the relationships I built with my coaches, with guys on campus, the guys I played with, I wouldn't trade that for anything. And so, you know, that was a big part of me wanting to coach my football experience. And at the time, I didn't know exactly where I wanted to end up as far as being in college or high school, what I wanted to do, but continue to coach at the college level, had the opportunity to get my master's. And that was a great step, you know, definitely something that helps you continue to climb the ladder and learn, but, you know, help you progress your career. So, you know, was at my alma mater as a defensive coordinator for a while. Most recently coached at a Division II school back in Ohio, and then, you know, had really had the itch to be a head coach. And so I've been looking around, and when I came and visited Beloit College, I was definitely impressed. You know, I felt like I could relate to the experience that these students were having. I felt like I could provide a great experience for them and hopefully mentor these guys and build the program. And so, you know, I was extremely excited to have this opportunity. I am right now. We're getting ready to go here for camp in about 2 weeks. So I'm fired up and looking forward to the future.
You know, if you were to, you know, kind of really define kind of your coaching philosophy and how you approach things, you know, how would you define how your coaching philosophy and, you know, and what you try to do in terms of the foundation of your program?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that as any coach, whether it's, you know, football, basketball, baseball, whatever it might be, I think that we all love the sport that we coach, but really we're coaching men, you know, we're building young men. I think that's something I try to remind myself every day, is that I want to mentor these guys to be the best people they can be. And I think along the way, if you do that the right way, you're going to build great relationships, get these guys to trust you, and, you know, be able to win games. And so I try to really instill in our guys that, you know, really we can build our great relationship and build our team around trust and respect. So that's something we talk about. And along with that, you know, I really try to, you know, do my best to, and our coaches to be teachers and to be mentors for our guys, you know, on a daily basis.
You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with new head coach at Beloit College, Seth Durr. Coach, you know, one of the things I love about it when I saw that, you know, from a defensive guy, is that, you know, you come with some defensive side of the ball. And I looked at, you know, kind of where Beloit has been, you know, the last couple of years, being able to really shore up, you know, themselves on that side of the ball. You know, from a defensive standpoint, you know, what are the kinds of things that you are looking to try to do on defense? At some point, you know, if you're going to win a championship, you got to be able to defend people. What are you hoping to kind of change and develop on that side of the ball?
Yeah, sure. I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a key to success. I mean, you know, I think that my philosophy on that side of the ball really has always been that I think that you can get, you know, a little bit too wrapped up in scheme, and really what it comes down to is you got to make your guys fundamentally sound, and you got to get them to play for you. So, you know, I think that something we really want to try to do is be simple in what we do, so our guys can understand, so we can let them play. But we've got to instill an attitude that we're going to really get after the ball as far as our effort, and also creating takeaways. You know, I think that that's something that if you look at every level, you can have a defense that may not be great to just completely stop people on every play. And honestly, you know, offenses have developed and that it's difficult. You know, people are going to get some yards unless you just got, you know, the best dudes over there that are better than everybody else. But if you can create takeaways, you can really stop drives. You can really change momentum. And so You know, I think something we talk about are really the three fundamentals would be tackling, effort, and takeaways are really the three things that we harp on a lot, and we're going to try to do every single day in our practice.
I worked there for many years before moving on to my next phase of my life, and been around. One of the big differences, I think, when we talk a lot of sports about what's happening at the Division I level and even Division II, but at Division III level, even, recruitment at all levels is the lifeblood of your program. Mm-hmm. But particularly at small college, it's important to really own some stuff regionally. And I know Beloit had pushed out a more national kind of recruiting model around football. What do you see your plan in terms of really having more of that ownership in some of your regional recruiting? Is that something that is part of what you see as your plan, or how do you see that as part of helping to build that team towards the future?
Yeah, sure. I think you have to take care of your backyard. Every school is different. Every situation is going to be a little bit different with who your school attracts and who your program can attract, but certainly there are always going to be guys in somewhat of a local area or, within, for us, because we're, right in the state line area here, we have to, within an hour down into Illinois, within an hour up into Wisconsin, for sure, we have to be able to identify every recruit that is, admissible for us and that we believe that can play for us. And so I think that, it starts with just our emphasis. I think that at times you can get caught up a little bit with maybe you have some success with some out-of-state areas, so you rely on that pretty heavily. And this is certainly a place, as you guys know, that attracts students from all over the nation. But I don't think really we can live off of, expecting not to, get the majority of our kids from Illinois and Wisconsin. So, I think that I've tried even as early as this spring, right after I got here, to develop some relationships with guys in this area, just getting to know coaches and going out and seeing them. We went to the Wisconsin Coaches Clinic up in Madison. The more you're visible and the more high school coaches know about your program, the more that their kids can know about it. So I think that's where we have to start and build upon that, build upon some of the local guys we have right now in our program and be able to help us, identify and relate to some kids that are like them as they come and visit campus. So I think that it's certainly something that we are, well aware of, that we need to emphasize and we have a plan for. So we'll continue to, really push to try to get those guys here on campus first as we start the recruiting process.
Before I pass it over to Phil, how would you, as you have three alums sitting here with you tonight, how do you envision, having alums support you in this effort, and, what are the things that you would hope that not only alums of the program or athletics or the college, how are you hoping that they might help you with this, really spreading the word and helping around the recruitment phase?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it can be hugely beneficial for us. And I think that, Devon, one thing is we've tried to talk with some alums who've come back and said, hey, we've been a little disconnected. We want the program to succeed. How can we help? Trying for me and our coaching staff to develop a network of guys that we could go to and maybe late in the process or maybe early in the process ask, a alum to give a phone call or write a letter to a young man that would be a top recruit for us, that maybe he's from that same area, maybe that, there's some connection there, or, we have guys who come to us and say, hey, I'm interested in getting into sports and doing, maybe they want to do broadcasting and radio like you guys, for us to be able to reach out and ask, hey, would you be willing to write a letter or put a phone call in? That's huge. Certainly that goes a long way in the recruiting process. And then the other thing we've done is, we had two prospect camps over the summer. We, got some guys on campus. We had some alums involved in that are local guys. you know, and kind of tell their story a little bit to those guys. And that's huge because I think that, you know, all recruits are going to hear positive things from that coaching staff. But a lot of times, you know, it could be an alum, it could be a player that's really going to maybe make the difference in, you know, the experience they have. So I think that the more we can involve, you know, a phone call, an email, or an on-campus connection, that's going to help us.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys on realsportsguys.com. We've got Coach Seth Durr here, the head football coach at Beloit College, about to start his first season as the Bucks coach. Coach, like Devon mentioned, Marcus, Devon, and I, you know, all attended Beloit College. We all had really fun and great experiences. But I know as a minority student coming in, my parents were a little hesitant with the private liberal arts setting. Overall, I had a great experience. But, you know, if there were potential recruits, parents out there listening, how would you convince them that would be a good fit for them as a minority parent?
Sure. Well, I think that, you know, one thing about our institution, as you guys know, is that it's a very diverse place. You know, not only people of all sorts of ethnicities, backgrounds, races, but geographically, you know, kids from across the nation, but kids, you know, from all sorts of countries here. So, you know, I think that this is a place that's going to really embrace diversity. And the other thing is that, you know, I don't think you'll find an institution that does as good a job of really supporting our students in every way possible, no matter what they want to do, no matter who they are. And so between our coaching staff, between administrators, faculty, staff on our campus, there's so much support system here that I think is really beneficial for our guys. At the same time, you know, as you mentioned, you know, we have students from all over, and it can be difficult for those families to really maybe see that young man there, or to know, hey, he's going to, you know, this town in Wisconsin I never heard of, and, you know, is he going to be okay? Yeah. But, you know, the support network here is extremely extensive, and they do a great job of really helping our students make the transition and supporting them as they go through their career and deal with things that come up. And so, you know, that's part of my job, but I think the school does a tremendous job with all of our folks on campus of really providing a support network for our kids and giving them as many resources as possible to be successful.
Coach, I want to shift to some X's and O's, specifically guys you got coming back and new players coming in. Can you talk a little bit about guys you got returning on the offensive side of the ball and what your strengths will be there this season?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing you may know or not know about us is that, you know, the previous coaching staff brought in just a great freshman class a year ago. Very talented group, deeper group than they, I think, had in the past. And a lot of those guys really contributed. You know, one key guy that is a special player for us and really at this level is our running back, Mason Dixon. You know, his father is in our Hall of Honor and is the all-time leading rusher for Beloit, played for Coach DeGeorge. But Mason was a kid that came from a little school called Bigfoot here, which has had great success in the state of Wisconsin. He had 1,300 yards, you know, one win team a year ago, and he's extremely physical. He's a fast kid, but just runs hard, you know. And so he's certainly a guy that we're really excited about. We know that we need to utilize a good bit on the offensive side. You know, I think we're fortunate that we've got, you know, some really good skill around him as well. We have two returning quarterbacks, both who will be sophomores as well. Cam Salee is a young man from Huntley, Illinois, who really athletic kid who plays baseball for us as well, started on the baseball team this past spring. He was our starter, at quarterback a year ago. And he got dinged up a little bit, and there was another young man that came in, another local kid from Milton High School just up the road here, who'd done a great job, named Evan Phillips. So both those guys, you know, we're really excited about. We have another young man that, you know, will play some quarterback a little bit, and he played some wide receiver last year. We've got a kid who will be a junior, one of our wide receivers, a real big kid from up in the Madison area named Mike Nolden, who is really probably one of our best leaders, just did a great job in the spring, and he's a really big target for our level that, you know, I think all those guys can really help do some good things for us. We've got some young kids coming in. We got a kid from out in New England that's a really big physical offensive lineman. I think that'll be an impact guy. And then some others that are going to, you know, we ended up getting a few transfers late in the process that I think could help as well. So those would be the guys on offense that I think, you know, we're really excited about, will be key contributors for us to hopefully having some success.
We'll be right back with Coach Durr. I'm going to pay some bills in 45 seconds. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the Real Sports Guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
You're listening to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. Shout out to LR, Larry Randall, Resistance Digital, another Beloit College alum and former football player. We're talking to Coach Hefter, the head coach of Beloit College, our alma mater. Coach, give us an idea of what your offense is going to look like as far as what kind of system you're going to put in or have in right now, and any offense that we might be able to identify, you know, on a D1 level or professional level that will mirror the type of system you're putting in.
Sure. So we're really moving to more of a spread offense, you know, and that means a lot of different things these days, but I think that, you know, we'll really be primarily a shotgun team, you know, with multiple personnel, and then that kind of depends on, you know, the guys that we feel like are playmakers for us. You know, so I think that we'd like to be in, you know, 11 and 10 personnel, utilizing some different groups, maybe some 20 with some two back in there.
Sure.
But, you know, I think that we also want to utilize tempo. You know, I think that if we'd like to think of ourselves in maybe some ways, it'd be like an Auburn, you know, going fast, trying to get the ball in space, you know, to guys who are playmakers for us. There'll be some, you know, definitely some read component to our run game with the quarterback and running back, primarily zone, you know, some power, some things like that. And then, you know, make sure that we have kind of answers and compliments off of those things in the pass game.
I laugh because when we played back in the 90s and for Devon in the 80s, you know, I think Coach George is rocking the wing tee, so we could
have
come
a long
way. How about our defensive side of the ball? Who's the guys you got coming back that are going to make that?
Yeah, definitely. I've heard a lot about the wing tee around here, so, you know, got to get out of that phase. But so, you know, on defense, we'll primarily be a 4-3 team. You know, that's what I've been most of my career, and Coach Wilson, our defensive coordinator, Mike Wilson, he'll continue to call that. We've kind of blended both of our systems together to you know, put our guys in the best position to be successful, and certainly there's always a component of, you know, who you have there and what you do. But, you know, I think that primarily I've been more of an even shell coverage team. So cover four, cover two, mixing some of those things up. I do like to be aggressive, you know, movement up front, zone blitzing. You know, if we got the guys, you know, in the secondary, we'll man blitz. You know, we'll see kind of how those matchups are. But I do think you need to take some chances, you know, I mean, based on what you know through game plan. You know, like to be sound and have some base stuff. But at the same time, I really believe in some movement and being dynamic and where our guys are. So primarily 4-3, you know, we'll have the ability to maybe get into some three-man front and maybe some nickel defense, depending on personnel and who we're playing.
So before we send it back to Devon, you mentioned earlier about spring practice. I know the D3 level, that's something that's relatively a newer concept. How is the spring practices and being able to have that extra time with your team really enhanced what you're able to do?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I think that for anybody, I mean, whether you're a Division I athlete or our guys, I think that, you get excited to get back into football at that time, kind of getting out of the weight room and getting into a new phase is always exciting. Despite us not being able to get into pads but we can go practice, so we can go out there and be without pads, really installing our offense and defense, running through drills, lining up against each other, competing. And it was critical for us this spring because we got a chance to really install our schemes, but I got a chance to put guys out there in competitive situations and do some team building exercises. So I think the guys had a lot of fun doing it, and it does change the pace, but it also allows you to really get ahead with what you want to install, so that now our upperclassmen coming back in, it'll be the same terminology. We'll kind of hit the ground running with the things that we already did in April.
You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with Beloit College Buccaneer head coach, Seth Durr. Coach, this has been a pleasure. As you know, and probably heard, we're very dedicated to Beloit College, but we're also dedicated to the idea of what it really means to be a student athlete and the kind of growth and development that happens with athletes on college campuses. And so I'm glad that you are, trying to kind of bring that movement back and make it a fun experience for the athletes competing there. And so we appreciate it. We appreciate you, spending this time with us tonight. I guess in closing, if you were to lay down, two to three things that you hope would happen this season that would give you a sense that you lay in the foundation, what are those things that you would want to, if we were to talk to you in December, you would have said, okay, you really have accomplished your goal in the first year. What are some of those things?
Yeah, sure. I think the main thing that we really talk about and are emphasizing with our guys is are we coming together as a team, and are we getting better on a weekly basis? And I think that'll be a huge measure for us as we look at the season is, do we feel like we have gotten better? Because I think that we know we've got a lot of work to do. We're not where we need to be, probably with our depth for sure. I think that just bringing in more talent, but also kind of bringing this team together is a key right now. I think the last few years have been rough, and when you're not winning, it's easy for guys to, not be as committed, not be as passionate about it. So are we getting better on a daily basis? I think that's a big key. Are our guys having fun? Certainly we want to go win every game we play, but are we being competitors and then having fun doing it? I think that that's why we played these games, is because we love it, and that's why I coach it. So I want to make sure that we're continuing to have fun doing that and getting better on a weekly basis. So those are the things that I hope to accomplish and hope to see when we look back at the end of the season.
Well, Coach, thanks for being on, and we'll certainly be at the games this year, the fall. I'm certainly going to see you at homecoming, but I'll get to some games to support you, and I look forward to spending some time with you this year. So thank you for being on the show with us tonight, and have a great evening.
Thanks so much, Devon. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to see what you guys are doing here, and look forward to meeting you.
All right. Take care, Coach.
All right. Take care.
You can learn more about that was Coach Seth Durr with Beloit College Buccaneers. You can learn more about the program at www.beloit.edu. Follow it. The whole idea of what is happening with small college sports, it's always great to kind of share this. Fellas, that was, you know, kind of took us back. Phil, you had me cracking up about the Wing T, which, you know, was part of your experience. But kind of, I was before the Wing T, but they brought it in my junior and senior year, but then they went on a run.
you can't argue with success, man. That wing T was successful. They would pound the rock. You
know? it
was successful.
It, bro.
I mean, you know, you can't criticize. I remember my freshman year, we literally would throw the ball like 7 or 8 times. And, you know, I played defense. So, I mean, when that offense was rolling, you got a whole lot of rest on the bench. You got a whole lot of rest. And in those early games of September, when it was still hot and humid in Wisconsin, you know, and the offense had those 7 or 8 minute drives, you loved it. You loved it because it was like you had a chance to recharge.
and what the George understood was he was never going to have 120 players on his roster like some of the – most people don't understand the UW system – schools who are Division III are powerhouses. I mean, they can collect players. They got things going on nationally. You know, Whitewater, we've all talked about that. But what he figured out is that to prepare for that. And given that you were not going to see that very often, just the preparation for it even made it difficult because it was something that you had to switch your whole defensive scheme and thought to even get ready for. So he understood the beauty of having to prepare for something that they don't see every day.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to see the team play about 5 or 6 years ago, and the new coach, I think it was Coach Braun, he was in, I think that's the guy that followed Coach Ed, and they had opened up the offense at that point. I saw him play in Jacksonville against Illinois College, and I remember talking to Coach David George, he was still assistant at that time on the football team, and we were just talking about, you know, how much things have changed, and you know, quarterbacks making reads, calling no huddles. I mean, it was exactly what you would expect in terms of a college offense and defense in terms of intelligence-wise. And, you know, I like what Coach Durer was saying in terms of his philosophy on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they've had some playmakers there the last 4 or 5 years. You know, one year they had 2 receivers over 1,000 yards. I mean, there's a kid in the NFL right now, Derek Carrier. That was just there 2 seasons ago. He's playing tight end now, but he played wide receiver there. I mean, they've had some guys on the edge, you know, that are true game makers. So hopefully, you know, they can continue that on and make some noise on the defensive side of the ball as well.
Yeah, I think having that offensive velocity, but having him as a defensive person, I think is the balance that they need, you know, to be able to be as progressive defensively as they've been offensively. To, you know, they were giving up, looking at, you know, giving up a lot to opponents, scoring. And, you know, you got to be able to stop some. You can't, you know, in this day and age, open offense, hard to stop people all the time, but you got to be able to stop them some of the time. And I think, you know, sure enough, that defensive side is important. And I think spring ball helps a program like Beloit a lot when you're trying to build that when you're not going to have the depth that you would have against with some of the other powerhouse Division III teams that, you know, will have 120 players coming out to try out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think people understand that. People think that just happens in big schools, but, you know, that's a big phenomenon at some of these powerhouse Division IIIs, you know.
Also, Wisconsin has the WIAC, which is, you know, they've nicknamed it the Conference of Champions because so many programs have won national championships in multiple sports out of that particular conference. So, you know, the recruiting is going to be a challenge in itself because you are going up against, when you talk about the Division III level, some of the most notable programs in the country at the DP level with UW Oshkosh, Stevens Point, Whitewater, some of those schools that are very well known throughout. So it'll be a challenge, but it seems like Coach Durer is up to the challenge and he's ready to kind of put Beloit in that conversation. You were talking about having a thin roster. When you got a thin roster as a coach, execution is important, and I think those spring days will play a big part in that. When you do, you can't just have a bunch of plays and run a You know, you can't be out. You can't be expecting to just out. You know, outrun the other team. You got to kind of out execute them. And what you do, you have to be very precise and very efficient at what you're doing. So those spring practices, you know, it'd be interesting to be on the campus with that, what the atmosphere is like at those spring practices, because you know, that's something that's new and that's something that's different than when we were, you know, stomping around the campus there at Beloit.
And it always helps when you get a legacy. When you get somebody
that's
you want anything like his daddy, that can help you get healthy quick.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I mean, I enjoy kind of just hearing his philosophy on recruiting at Beloit. You know, all three of us went there. You know, Marcus, you were a basketball star. I was just looking at the record book. You all over the record book. You know, just a defensive star that could score. And but, you know, Devon and I played football there. And, you know, when Coach Durr was talking about his experience, I mean, here's a guy who was an All-American at the D3 level, but, you know, he said, listen, you know, I could have walked on somewhere, but I decided to play D3 because I wanted to play. And that was exactly my situation. I could have walked on at a Western Michigan or a Michigan State and hoped to be a special team player by my fifth year, or I could go to a place like Beloit and play right away as a freshman, and that's exactly what happened. You know, I asked a question about, you know, minority recruiting, and, you know, that's something that was close to my heart. I'm sure all three of our parents, well, I know mine did, I'm sure yours did too. You know, when we went to go visit in this small city in Wisconsin, they wanted to know what the deal was. And, you know, 4 years later, they're thanking everybody who would listen, including Devon, who was an administrator at that time. Thank you for convincing us to send my kid to Beloit. I mean, going to Beloit, man, just exposed me to so much stuff early on, and has been a big part of my development, you know, as somebody in corporate America who rose up the ranks pretty fast and now back in academia. I mean, the foundation I got there at Beloit, not just in the classroom and on the football field, but just the fun, you know, lifelong relationships I built, man, is something, you know, 14 years later, oh my goodness, that since I graduated, that, you know, I still really, really, you know, cherish, man. I'm curious to hear about y'all Beloit experiences in regard to sports and the overall experience.
Then I'll go after D.
Yeah, you know, when people go there now, they look at the facilities and the way they've upgraded was incredible. And, that, you know, I came, and it's funny Phil tells his story because I had a similar story coming out of high school, you know, playing in Michigan. And Beloit was the only place I applied because my friend's mother made me do it because she's like, you're going to do something. And I remember going over to visit and meeting with Coach George in the spring. I was helping my friend moved out at a residence hall. He was an upper-class person there. And I remember meeting him, and he, you know, Coach George, you know, had that Bo Schembechler look. And I was like, I think I can play for this guy. And but I remember showing up and realizing, you know, and I came from, I mean, we were, you know, pretty top program in the state of Michigan, ranked in the country. And so I came in thinking, you know, that, you know, oh, this is Division III football. And I remember playing against John Davis, who was an All-American, and going into the hole to try to tackle him, and he ran past me like I stole the government cheese. And I realized that some of the differences between cats who play Division III and Division I was sometimes just size, right? And so it was a wake-up call. But there was so much I began to learn, man, through that experience. And, you know, Beloit transformed me. I went there as an athlete and left as somebody who was really caring about what I was going to do academically in life. I mean, I went through a change there, and, you know, I wouldn't be here today without that experience. That it forced me to expand my mind because of all the different cultures I met when I was there. It's a smaller place, but you have people from all over the world, so you are interacting with people who speak multiple languages. And so that experience for me was powerful, and I reflect on it all the time. And it was challenging because I had to stretch. And my identity was that of an athlete. I left, it was more than that, which I think is something that's powerful.
Yeah, and I have to echo both sentiments of you guys. As far as my experience at Beloit, man, you know, I came in with a very narrow view of myself, of the world, and I left with a much more expanded view of who I could be, the possibilities for myself, but also of just what the world had to offer and what I wanted to explore. And I know that sounds cliche and it sounds like a, you know, an admissions postcard or something like that, but that's really what it was. I mean, you know, I came in, first I had great people, you know, Devon, you were one of them, Cecil Youngblood, just great people who helped guide me throughout the process, Dean Flanagan, who took the time to really kind of help a kid who had potential but didn't quite understand their own potential began to see all the possibilities. You know, it's kind of like being a young Jedi and trying to master the Force. And you don't quite know all of the vastness of the Force. And so you need somebody to kind of guide you through that and help you really understand how vast it is. And so they were like Jedi Masters, you know, D. Wills? You were like my Jedi Master, man. But it was an unbelievable experience. It definitely changed who I am. It changed the trajectory of where I was going as far as my life path. And I'm extremely grateful and thankful. And again, you know, I came from a family of one parent who didn't go to college. And so finding Beloit was a stroke of luck on my part. You know, I was going there to play basketball. I was going there because, you know, I fell in love with the coach. You know, I saw somebody who I felt like could help me not only as an athlete but as a young man, as a young African-American man, kind of grow to where I wanted to be. And I found a whole different world that, you know, taught me how to interact with people of all different backgrounds, which, you know, as you said before, so these are skills that, you know, as somebody who, you know, went on to get a master's, interacts with people on a daily basis, they're invaluable. You know, being able to relate
right.
to people across different cultures, different experiences is just invaluable. So, you know, my mom was singing Beloit's praises as well as her first baby boy walked across that stage.
I was there. One of the things I remember was my freshman year. I wasn't going to class much, and it was probably the second or third game of the season, and you know, Coach George got word that I wasn't going to class and wasn't doing well when I was, you know, what was there in class, and I got summoned to the office. And
you got summoned. You never want to get summoned anywhere.
Right, and it was not a good thing. And I remember this. He pretty much told me that for the next week, I would not be practicing. I'd be at study sessions. He sent me over to EDP to talk to Dean Flanagan and talk to the folks that are over there. And I got a plan going. I got a plan going in terms of how I was going to make it there academically. And he didn't seem very concerned that his starting defensive end may not be playing that week. He was more concerned about, you know, my development as a person, as a student, and that was really, really critical. He also called my dad, and that conversation from dad also got me on the ball pretty quick. pretty quick.
I can understand what that conversation was about.
Yeah. It was a one-side conversation. I was doing a lot of listening. But the point being was, I'm not sure I would have gotten that kind of attention and focus and a clear message that, you know, academics is first, your development is first, you know, had I walked on to a Division I school where I wouldn't have been playing much, I would have been spending 10 times the amount in the sport. And you know, it was kind of like those kind of things in regard to sports and those kind of connections and just lessons that you learned right away are things that I think about, you know, in regards to my experience there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it in that kind of the expectation of why you're there was reinforced all the time. And, you know, it's one of those reasons why, you know, it's important, you know, it's what's great about having our own show that we can share those kind of stories. But it's important to understand that the world of sports, there's a lot of good things happening, not just tied to wins and losses, but are tied to how lives, real lives are being changed. And, you know, in the day and age when we started the conversation, you know, talking about, you know, domestic violence and, you know, Donald Sterling and everything else, to end the conversation talking about, you know, how real lives get changed through sports is important. And sometimes that gets lost. The value of sports as it relates to that gets lost in a lot of these discussions. So, you know, it's always good to be able to share this part of our story with the folks who are listening and to really share a place that was special to, that has been special to all three of us.
There it is.
And it's never been written.
There it is. So, you know, it was a great, great experience. And, you know, I think you summed it up. It's very special. I think at the Division III level, you really get the full experience of what it means to be a student athlete. And I think we all took full advantage of that. And Beloit provided us a framework to do just that, to take full advantage of the opportunity to be a full-out student athlete. You know, we all did tremendous amounts of work outside of what we did on the athletic field that we played on, and that's where probably the most meaningful growth happened, and it happened because it was facilitated by the faculty, the staff, the coaches, just everybody involved. They invested in you in a way that I don't think happens at a lot of places. So, fellas, I think it's about that time for us to get ready to close this thing out. Are you listening to The Real Sports Guys? RealSportsGuys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. Fellas and I will be signing off. Coming back next week, same time, same place. Make sure you check us out Tuesday nights, 8:30 to 10 o'clock Central Time. The Real Sports Guys, Renegade. Take care. Be well. Peace.
You listen to The Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. Sponsored by Resistance Digital Solutions, resistancedigital.com, RSG.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Coach, we recently put together our top NBA players of all time. Our top 50, and we had a split with Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. Who would you consider to be the greatest NBA player of all time?
For me, I would have another person, because I look at the best players, who's played on the best teams, and who's won the most championships. Now, we all know that there's been individual guys, you know, like Wilt, or they score the most points, or they've done it. But who's been the best player that made the best players, that made the best players around them, that who won the most championships? And there's no question who that was, and that's Russell, Bill Russell. He, in my opinion, because he played defense, he played offense, his rebounding, his shot blocking, and then he was a great leader. I mean, he was a coach. He was, I mean, in today's world, who would be a player coach on a basketball team in the NBA? Could you name one that could coach their team? He did that. I mean, the magnitude of what he accomplished and with his leadership ability is just amazing to me. And to do it what he did. No, he had some great players around him, but he made those players better. And that's just my personal opinion on what he did. You know, and I know what happens when these kinds of questions come up. You know, we're in the now, and so people kind of forget about it. In 20 years, everybody probably will think, you know, the current players, maybe it would be LeBron or somebody, and they kind of forget about, you know, the great player Michael Jordan was, except for, you know, with the clips and things. But, you know, obviously, you know, what Russell did was just amazing, and how many changes.
Listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
How to plant onions.
Garden variety, big time.
As you would say,
onion. Oh.
How you living, PhD? How you living, man?
I'm doing good, man. I spent exactly 17 minutes putting together my brackets yesterday, and I feel real good about it. I have a few shockers, as always. I've grown a reputation of really having a long shot. I haven't had a lot of success with it, I'll be honest. It's been a couple of years since I've had some really good success in my brackets, probably 2010. I got some good picks this year. I'm ready to share them.